The car you drive every day should be fun.
But it has to do the boring stuff too, like commute, be affordable, and haul your groceries.
You can have both, and we'll help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Lots to cover on the podcast tonight.
Oh, yes.
We should talk about our pilgrimage trip briefly, because we are going. It's getting pretty cool, getting exciting.
Yep, yep.
We've got some Tesla news. We've got two really cool car debates, one from Rob in Maine and one from Ryan coming up in Manhattan, actually talking about Manhattan commuting. So that'll be interesting as well.
Right, right. Well, it's actually been a while since you and I have debated, I mean, gotten right into something here.
True.
Because of our podcast number 200.
Yeah.
That was
all
any
questions.
Non-automotive question there.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, we were talking about
the cars at price points.
Exactly.
That was
exactly
a monster podcast. I'm surprised it didn't take us 4 hours, but it was very fun. We hope you enjoyed those guys.
Well, we saw a headline here in the news that's piqued our interest, specifically about Tesla cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that they're apparently about to become more expensive to insure. And I'm wondering how many of you out there are in your Tesla right now listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
If that's the case, we read this on CNET.com that has
It's a lot
syndicated,
of places today, yeah.
It is. The one that we're looking at here is, like I said, on CNET, they've syndicated and compiled a lot of information from various insurance
mm-hmm,
companies.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Tesla has pushed back. They've issued a statement saying, this is a flawed test, this is not right.
That's the part of this
You're
is interesting
to
me.
Comparing to the wrong cars.
That's the part of this is interesting
this
to me.
Stuff.
I mean, Forbes has got it, a lot of places have got it. I mean, the short version is AAA has said they're going to increase rates as much as 30% across the board Teslas. And they're looking at the numbers of the Model S and the Model X and talking about the number of incidents, meaning the number of times there's an insurance claim,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, doesn't mean catastrophic wreck. It just means the number of times you called your insurance company and said, I need this fixed. And that can cross-reference with the amount of cost to get the cars fixed. This is the reason they're wanting to increase the rates. What I find fascinating is the marketing bait-and-switch logic of the Tesla response.
Okay, you're referring to their statement here?
Yes, yes, very specifically, because we know these cars are safe.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, we know this. Mm-hmm. This isn't this AAA is not making this recommendation because of safety of the cars. But there's a couple things in the logic of Tesla's statement here that I think you're actually trying to spin this away from the discussion.
Sure. I mean, this is based on the Highway Loss Data Institute, who is claiming the Model S has 46% more claims than this segment average.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's not a whole lot in the Tesla Model S segment, nor is there a whole lot of other competitors in this segment.
But I'm guessing it probably means, I mean, who knows how they judge the segment, and maybe that's part of the problem here, but that probably means more than like A8s and 7 Series and those kind
Could
of things.
Could be, just because of the price, price category that it's in.
But insurers, by and large, the whole reality of insurance is just math. It's gamble math. It's if your car, this is why some cars that are low power but all driven by teenagers have high insurance rates. They're not expensive to fix, it's just they keep getting crashed.
Right.
So
right.
This is the number of times that Model S or Model X owners are calling their insurance company and going, I need a claim, and the amount of cost it is to fix it. That's why the rates are being increased.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with the safety of these cars.
Right.
Nothing at all to do with that.
Right.
What's interesting is that Tesla is frustrated because they're getting compared to cars like a Volvo wagon, and then they go in – this is the first bait and switch in my mind. They say the Model S is the fastest 0 to 60 time of any production car, and the Model X is the fastest SUV. Shouldn't we compare it to like stuff? Okay, Tesla, you want to compare it to like stuff? Do you want to be insured at the same rate as the supercars that are doing your 0 to 60 times? Because that's what you're saying.
It kind of is, and their statement also says that they expect the Model X to receive the best score for any SUV ever tested. In terms of the National Highway Traffic Safety Association, they've claimed that. They haven't actually tested the car up to this point. Their marketing is spinning it as, this is going to be another safe one, guys, so no problems there.
But this isn't a safety discussion.
I
got my Model S dinged. Oh, look, this isn't working.
And it's expensive to repair.
That's what it's about. It's not about safety. I think it's fascinating how Tesla has taken this from a marketing perspective and spun it into 0 to 60 times and our safety ratings, which is not how insurance gets created.
Although, do we expect them to do any other kind of behavior? Because in any category their Teslas have been put against, whether it's range or power or any of this stuff, if somebody finds a chink in the armor, they're coming after you with some sort of statement.
They always are, and it's always marketing spin. But
we're not surprised.
I thought it was fascinating that they spun this in an area that I think it has nothing to do with, and that's the response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, my thinking is, okay, so why are people – I mean, I would think if you're the company and you're concerned – there's the other part of this of just don't be concerned about it. It is what it is.
Sure.
This
sure.
is the cost of ownership. I'm sorry. But if you're a company and you want to be concerned with why are our cars more to insure, then you have to dig to the bottom of why are there more claims and why do our cars cost so much to fix? That's not the response here.
Fascinating.
Which I find really interesting. Yeah. And we're talking about 0 to 60 times in an insurance discussion.
This is how we sell cars now. This is the big category. If it's the quickest, well, then that's the best
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought it was an interesting – to me, it was like a marketing lesson. It was like that's – you've taken the discussion and shifted the focus.
That's the whole point, mm-hmm. like distract.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very quick note to talk about one of our new sponsors, Autotempest.com. You and I are constantly looking for cars.
Mm-hmm. The disease is
Everybody
struck.
Listening is constantly looking for their possible next new car. So if you enter your search once on Autotempest.com, it searches all the top used car sites at once. So it's kind of an easy way to make sure you're not going to miss out on your next car.
Yeah, one stop, yeah.
Exactly right. That's T-E-M-P-E-S-T. So like a storm, Autotempest.com. All right, well, we've got Rob in Maine writing to us with a different kind of a story, and it's a debate. You'll know after mm-hmm. we read his story to you, and it's a rather short email.
Yeah.
But it starts out with the fact that his father has unfortunately recently passed away.
Yeah, we're sorry.
Rob, we are sorry for your loss because he and his dad were the car guys in the family. They were really the enthusiasts. And as a matter of fact, the fun car his dad had just purchased is a black 2017 Porsche 911 Turbo S.
Yeah, if you look at the hierarchy of 911s, that is the big boy.
It is. This is top of the food chain, but unfortunately also he drove it very little during the prior year because of health reasons, and so it's only got 1,500 miles on it.
Amazing.
Now, Rob has 5 kids between ages 2 and 14.
Rob is a busy, busy man. Yes.
He's also, fortunately, got a very understanding wife to his proclivities, to his car disease here.
His car disease in a big, big way. I'm curious if any of those kids have got the disease yet, too.
I hope it rubs off. As a matter of fact, he and his wife went to Germany last year for a European delivery mm-hmm. of his brand new BMW 235i. Mm-hmm. So you were at BMW Welt, and you mm-hmm. went there
That's
and
awesome.
Had a
I love
great time.
It. I love
it's
it.
Like the world's best BMW dealership. So they also have a Chevy Suburban, 3-car garage. So Chevy Suburban, of course. If you've got 5 kids, you either have a panel van or a moving truck or a Suburban, as we've noted.
This is the 7-seat car. You have to have one. That's definitely true.
So, yeah, he's up in Maine, and he's got snow tires for the 235. It's a manual, rear-wheel drive, of course,
mm-hmm.
and he's managed just fine.
Drives it year-round, yeah.
Here is where the debate comes in. He's going to be inheriting the Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
It's a black car, as I mentioned, PDK, and he's got a real soft target for it. I mean, this is... Who wouldn't?
It's a car with history. It's a car that's got nostalgia now.
Yes,
yeah.
And not only is it a nice car, it's, you know, it's got his memories with his father.
Absolutely,
that's
absolutely.
What's the connection there to it. So it's a $200,000 car.
Mm-hmm.
It's an expensive car.
Very.
And the conundrum that he's facing here, Rob is facing, is the fact that with kids, there's bikes in the garage and just life mm-hmm. happens and mm-hmm. scratches and balls are kicked and all this stuff. And do I keep it? Do I sell it?
Yeah. What happens
what
to the BMW? All of this.
Yeah.
I thought about this a lot. I think I have an answer here, Rob. But this is an interesting conundrum because you have this car that now can be yours. And theoretically, taxes of absorbing it is probably what it's going to cost you. That's kind of amazing.
Not nothing, but compared to
the cost of the car. I mean, the first thing I want to say about Rob, and I'm going to guess a few things here, Rob, but based on what you've told us, if you have 5 kids, your chances of going out and buying a $200,000 911, it's just not even in the discussion point.
Right.
So here you have this
car.
Not
at this point in life, definitely.
Exactly. Here you have this car that you can actually have in your life now that is way beyond anything you could go out and buy yourself. And on top of that, it has history and memories.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, this is a rare opportunity.
Okay.
To have and keep that car. You talk about how you like your BMW. You have memories with that with your wife. I get it. That's cool. But the BMW 235i pales in comparison to the 911 Turbo S. And if you're driving that BMW year-round, well, the Turbo S is even all-wheel drive. Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm very much going to say, and I'm going to explain it a little further, but I'm very much going to say the BMW goes and the 911 stays. There's history. There's nostalgia. I say keep this car. Have life happen to this car in honor of your father's life. And the other thing I'm going to say, because we talk about cars being too precious, and I see your concern here. Here's the thing I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Pay whatever the taxes, sell the BMW, pay whatever the taxes are so you can have the 911. Then spend the $2,000 or $3,000 to get the entire car clear coated. The clear
the protection film.
The paint protection film. Get the whole car done. Yeah. People we've talked to that have had that done, $3,000-ish to get that done. Get the whole car done.
Yeah.
Right away, immediately. So now what happens is
there
may be the scratches or the dings or that kind of stuff. First off, let that car have a life as part of your life, but you've also now defended it a little bit, so you've taken the edge off of those chances of problems. If one of your kids walks by carrying something and it doesn't scratch the paint, it scratches the film.
The film
you can
itself.
Get that door redone or whatever. I think do the entire car immediately. Keep it. Let it have life in your life.
I'm reminded of my dad's own experience when my grandfather passed at age 102 after having bought that Lexus at age 98 with a six-year extended warranty.
Yes, he was a man of positive thinking.
Mr. Optimism himself. So he had his last car was an 09 Buick Enclave, so kind of a SUV.
It's the Acadia for Buicks,
And, you know, decent car. That was his car, and my dad ended up inheriting that. And hung on to it. And as a matter of fact, it's been passed to my sister now, she and her husband and kids.
Yeah.
And they still drive it. It's got a lot of miles. It's been to Alaska and back. It's been across the country. It's been shipped everywhere. It's up there, and he's put a lot of money into it, keeping it up. But I think, you know, not that we need to just keep hanging on to possessions because your memories are, you know, most deep with your father and your relationship. When we can't pretend to know the relationship with your father.
True, true.
But as a reminder, I mean, do you have any photos with you and he with the car? And if, I mean, that's a special thing too. And I'm kind of inclined because think about this. Say you keep it. Say you just keep it. 10 years from now, how much is that car going to be worth? Still maybe $100,000?
Possibly.
Still quite a bit of money should you need to sell it for any reason, like college education in, what, 3 years for your 14-year-old?
Yeah, true. That's coming fast.
Sorry.
Reality is dawning quickly, and it has a dollar sign behind it. Yeah.
Daddy's driving your college education. It's a rare opportunity, and I kind of feel like to support the memory of your dad. And do you think he would want you to keep it and just enjoy it?
That's good.
I mean, I'm a little biased. Okay, I'm a lot biased because it is a Porsche, especially Turbo S. But I'd say that with any car. And as, evaluated and demonstrated by my dad keeping his dad's car, it's still in the family. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I, you know, to those of us who know why that car is in our family and now why my sister has it.
Sure.
And he just gave it to my sister. He drove it for a while and then he just handed it down to her. And it's just a part of us still. You know, he's still in our lives, in our hearts. Yeah. And I kind of feel the same way. I mean, you could just sell it and $200,000 will buy you a lot of nice cars and a lot of college education for the kids. But I think for now, think about it. Don't do any rash decisions yet. It's in your family now.
Yeah.
Don't.
I think there's a unique opportunity there.
I think so
too. There's a memory of his dad that can live on in that car in the family. It's pretty cool to me.
I'd be the same way.
I'd be very curious.
Yeah.
Let us know what you decide on that, Rob. But I know there's a lot wrapped up in that story. So we'd be curious to hear more. Before the next car debate, I want to talk about Covercraft. Covercraft.com, they have everything. If you're protecting your car, you want to be certified Paul-owned, you can park your car outside with a full car cover.
Right.
If you park your car for the day, I now am addicted to the sunshade. You can get sunshades there.
Yeah.
If you have a dog or kids like I do, you can actually defend against that. They have a whole canine section. So whatever you want to do to defend your car, Covercraft.com, if you use the code DEBATE, free shipping in the continental U.S.,
Well, Father's Day is around the corner for 2017, and we've got Ryan in Manhattan writing in for his dad on behalf of his dad. Hello, Ryan's dad.
Yep.
I hope you're listening to the podcast as well in your commute because he is commuting. And this is a man, everyone, whose car history over the last 15 years consists entirely of BMW 5 Series leases.
You found the car you like, and you lease the BMW 5
Series. At least you're consistent.
Well, yes. Well, I mean, this is my dad. He stumbled across the Caprice Classic.
Caprice.
And he was right. Operating at a different financial reality. We never leased cars. We bought very used cars. But he must have bought six. Over
because kidding me. I thought it was just two.
No.
I'm
trying to actually think it through here because we had a couple that weren't around for very long, but I can specifically think of four for sure.
You're kidding me.
Okay. And unbelievable. And he kept and after I was like out of college and married, he kept like stumbling upon some guy 20 years older than him. And my father already seems older than he is, but he'd stumble across somebody 20 years older than him that had one that had like 1,000 miles. He'd be like, "I'm buying your car." So he just a run. So I understand you get into a rut. You have a car you like. You just think this works. And especially with leases, you're trading up every 3 years. I see how this happens. But where we're headed here is I think Ryan wants his dad to branch out. And life is changing a bit, so there's an opportunity here. So that's where this gets interesting. We can actually, Ryan's dad, get you out of the 5 Series. Nothing wrong with the 5 Series, but let's do something else.
No. He's got a list of requirements that his dad has given him. And of course, Ryan, I get the idea in your email here that you're trying to push your dad into a car that you want rather than your dad. Because you've suggested a Porsche Cayman and something smaller like an Audi S3 here. But I want to read the list here, the list of requirements, and then let everybody listening decide for themselves as to what it should be. Now, his dad is about to move from the suburbs into Manhattan. Yep. He's got about 6 months left on the current lease with the current 5 Series. So get this. So for the lease, his price range is $50,000 to $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Healthy. It can be four doors. It could be two doors with decent space in the back. Could be manual. A good automatic is okay. And it's just got to be a nice place. Mm-hmm. So he's not necessarily commuting, but is going to be making weekly approximately 100-mile trips in New York area traffic. So
yep, this is a commute car.
You're going to want a cocoon in
it's a
way.
It's a nice place to be.
Right?
Yep.
All right. So something else to note. His dad does not like this design trend appearance of instrument panels having an iPad glued to the dash. Which seems to be a trend, and I agree.
It's just about ubiquitous at this point, unfortunately.
It's hard to get away from it, especially on brand new cars. And yes, the 5 Series is going to that, have already gone to that. There's some that integrate these screens better than others.
True.
Some make it very obvious.
Yeah.
Teslas are huge and in your face and controls everything about the car.
Mm-hmm.
Others have retractable screens. They're more integrated into the instrument panel. It just kind of depends on the car and the design. But yes, the ones that look stuck on that you could reach out and pick up off the instrument
panel.
Feels
like you could peel it off. It should plug in. Yeah.
Okay. So also, he doesn't care about navigation, satellite radio, backup cameras. To that, I will say, Ryan, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, we introduced cordless phones. Remember cordless phones?
Oh, yeah.
You know, your home phone?
Yeah.
And my mom was... Never. I don't need the cordless phone. And then we couldn't pry it out of our hands. Couldn't get it away from me. And then eventually, cell phones and couldn't pry that thing out of our hands.
You remember the phones in the car that had a cord? Remember those?
Oh,
they plugged into the box, like on the center console, and you picked them up and you dialed the back and you picked it up and you had a cord in your car. Remember that?
And now we're back to the cord because, when you're charging your phone, you've got a 3-foot cord plugged into the wall.
You've got that plugged into your dash.
Actually, back to the cord.
Fair point.
Anyway, so I will say that he will come to appreciate that, and some cars do those things better than others. So also, he's interested in good mileage, and the last point here, we're not going to be able to convince him to go Japanese, despite the Japanese building some excellent cars.
That's out for him, yep.
Apparently that's out. Ryan, I came with one car. One
Did
car
you really?
Only.
Okay.
One car, thusly it shall be.
I have two. Before I have you give you one, I want to go on a little tangent here because there's something mentioned in passing where the Porsche Cayman comes up. Here's the impression that I'm reading into this. There will still be the summer house in the suburbs, and Ryan's hoping his dad will get something like a used Porsche Cayman for the fun car that he uses when he's not in Manhattan.
Sure.
That's
sure.
a totally separate tangent of this. And that's exciting, but I think Ryan is kind of looking at that. He's kind of excited about that. But what we're really shopping for is this commuter.
Yeah, yeah.
And so let's hope, Ryan and your dad, let's hope there is a fun car in your future. But I didn't head down that road at all. And I have two that I think solve the rest of the problem, but I'm thinking about commuting in Manhattan, a nice place to be, good gas mileage. My headspace is entirely in that. Obviously, all the Japanese stuff is out, but you have one. Do you want me to go with two, or you want to do Sniper Shot right now?
I'm curious with your two, because they might be a little bit divergent, but I'm curious. So go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, okay, you're a BMW guy, Ryan's dad. So BMW i3.
Really?
The i3 with the extender has 180-mile range. You can get around 100 miles on all electric. It's your commute car. You stay BMW. Mm. It's interesting. It's a nice place to be inside. But it's your commuter. Why not have an i3 and commute in that? What's wrong with that?
Not a thing.
And you're still BMW, but we're not shopping for the big boat that needs to do Manhattan. We don't need to do that. We don't have to have. We just have a nice place to be. It stays in that lineup. And that led me to one other one as well.
Okay, okay.
The other one I'm going to say, I stayed in this same vein, though. But the Audi A3 Sportback e-tron.
No kidding.
It's the A3 wagon. You have space. We all know that it's cliche of the Audi nice interiors. Okay,
but yes, definitely.
It's your Audi hybrid. You know, you could go and you could find, are they still selling TDIs? Can you pry one away from a dealer yet? But this is not even that now. You don't have to go diesel. I mean, let's be honest, with the hits that are happening to the diesel market, I'll be interested to see if diesel even survives in this country. But hybrid and electric cars are going to survive. So here is your hybrid electric A3 wagon. You know the interior will be nice, but it's a commute car. Which means gas mileage would be fantastic.
Sure.
You can plug it in. I'm thinking commute. Those are my two. They're nice, German, interesting interior, electric hybrids, i3, e-tron, done.
Wildly different. And kudos for that. That's interesting.
I just got on that rabbit trail and went, here are my cars.
Wildly
for sure.
Different. Hmm. I'm ruminating on that one. I'm very intrigued. I did go full on, this is the place. This is the interior you're going to want to be in.
Okay, great. What is it?
It's not German.
Ooh,
It's not American. It's not Japanese. No. You know where I went.
Uh-huh, okay.
It's the Volvo S90, everyone.
All right, yeah.
I am endlessly intrigued with this car, especially after sitting in it. Mm-hmm. Have not driven it yet. Interestingly, every trim level comes with an inline four.
Yeah.
The top-end model is something like 315 horsepower.
It's turboed, supercharged, everything they can do.
Everything. Yeah. Still gets great gas mileage. But if you're concerned about nice place to be...
That's a really good one. That's
wherever you're
really
at.
Really good one. Yeah.
I mean, and as far as instrument panel design goes... This, to my eye, looks the least stuck on and tacked on. It looks integrated. It's clean. It's very large and clear. It's not as large as a Tesla, but the documentation in the screen, it's so well done. So much. It's almost like Volvo's turned into an interior company. Oh, yeah, and
that
by the way.
Car. Yeah.
But they've always thought that way.
They're killing it on interiors. Their seats are amazing. The materials are good. I like that you went there because that's a fantastic alternative to the BMW and even the German world, but yet superb. That's excellent. I really do like that.
Well, I just keep coming to this car. And yes, it's larger. It's larger. Okay. But even for the top-end model, the inscription starts at 55. Mm-hmm. So you can easily lease the most loaded, tricked-out S90
that's
you could
good.
Possibly
that's,
come
that's
up
really
with.
That's really good. I like that.
And feel like you're in a German car, but it's got different design sensibilities. And that's what separates, for me, the Scandinavian design. We've talked about furniture and my desire to go, you know, to Scandinavian countries and look at furniture.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by Danish furniture. And that sensibility is what separates this car away from the Germans. The knobs are jewelry. It's almost like Italian furniture, you know, if you turn a chair over and you think, why am I paying $5,000 for this chair? Well, you turn it over and the welds are perfectly dressed and you don't see a fastener. You don't see anything. So every surface, doesn't matter where you turn this chair, it's been thought about. It hasn't been, oh, well, you're never going to see back here. So we'll just kind of end
we'll
it there.
We'll cover it up, yeah.
The same thinking applies, in my opinion.
Interesting. All right.
I'm intrigued with this car.
If you take your Volvo to IKEA, do you open a wormhole? What happens?
Hmm. They might even not let you in the parking lot.
I don't know. Who knows?
Or maybe it's Volvos only.
There's a special Volvo parking section.
But
I do like that because you're right. We've stepped away from a string of five series into something that is going to be a real event cocoon car.
Yeah.
That is in the I think that's excellent.
It's very different.
I mean, you and I went very different places.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's excellent.
All right. Well, we've got tons of questions here, man. Seems to continue to increase.
Which
and
is awesome.
For
I love
that,
it.
We
I love
thank
it.
You. Many, many questions on all three social media here, the Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Where would you like to start? What's interesting to you here?
Well, we just finished shooting a big comparison this weekend. In fact, we shot two pieces at once. I'm gonna try to discuss this without doing spoilers, but we shot a variations of the Miata, or actually a better way to put it is the Miata alternatives this weekend.
Right.
We shot the RF. We finally got in that, or I'll be honest, I kind of got in that. It was painful at times, but I got
I
in that.
I handed you a can opener every
exactly,
time you needed
to get
exactly
out. Exactly right. We had the Fiat 124 Spider with us, and we had the updated brand new Toyota 86. So we put those three together in a comparison. We're excited about headed for television first and then YouTube. We also are going to do a piece straight to YouTube that is the first-gen BRZ versus the updated 86. So those early 86s versus this refresh. So we shot all of that. Gavin wrote in. Gavin, who shot with us for a while.
Yeah.
He wrote in and he asked about the 124.
I'm glad
he did,
specifically
about the engine, because the engine in that car is the Fiat 500 Abarth engine. It's that 1.4-liter turbo versus the 2-liter naturally aspirated in the Miatas. And he's just kind of saying, compare and contrast, is that kind of a cheater engine is what his question is.
Yeah. No, I like that you suggested this, Gavin. most of me wants to say you're going to have to wait for the episode to watch it, because we kind of both went on a different tear. I think you and I kind of both.
Well, no one's surprised to hear we didn't agree on this three car review, but I do think we both, and this I don't feel like is a spoiler. I think we both were very intrigued by that engine in that chassis.
Yes, and intrigued by the fact that the choice was done to put a different engine. I mean, entirely different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Just the business decision alone is what intrigued the daylights out of me to. Okay, we're building this car.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Pretty much everything that is an MX-5. You know what we should do?
While we're at it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's change the heart. And I think I feel like it makes so much sense for the way most people are going to buy that car and use it. If you're a person who is going to wind an engine out, use it on the track, use it on back roads all the time, where you don't mind just you know wringing the neck of the engine and touching redline all the time. Then, okay, having the naturally aspirated thing is great, fine, no problem. I mean, that's why the FRS works.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
if you're hanging out in the mid-range of commute world, that's where the turbo is fun. In anything, this is why the Fiesta ST is easier and more fun to commute in than the FRS, because you're using it at 3,500 RPM, where the turbo engine goes, I got all kinds of power, and the naturally aspirated goes, give me a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Although I will say this, having all three of these cars generated endless discussions about the bits and pieces that we would take from each car.
Oh, yeah.
We were planning that for a buffet.
Yeah.
I want, you know, this smorgasbord here. I'd like that part and that part. And if only I could get it in that car, I'd buy it right now. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much our entire shooting weekend.
The whole discussion, we kept coming back to, you know what I want out of this car? Yeah, absolutely. All the time.
Well, there was a question here that intrigued me on Facebook. Zacchaeus asked me, is Paul sophisticated enough to like Mozart? Zacchaeus, sadly, no. I only like Chopin, Rachmaninoff, Ernst von Dagnani, and long, long the Chinese prodigy, and composers like John Williams and Hans Zimmer.
But Mozart did not make the list.
No.
That's a ridiculous listing right there. It really is, yes.
I mean, Ernst von Dagnani, his name implies nobility. He was a Hungarian composer, born in Bratislava, and...
I'm back to white noise over here. I've got no idea where we are.
I've played a number of his pieces, and they're quite brilliant.
Well, that's the thing. We should also reveal the fact that Paul every now and then sits down at a piano, and 5 minutes later you go, I didn't know you could play. I mean, he throws it down every now and then, and it's just this little surprising thing he does. So when he says he's following these composers, he's actually sitting down at the piano and playing stuff. So it's not just like, oh, listen to this. No, I'm going to go play that, which is quite different reality.
You know, interestingly, Billy Joel even dabbled with some classical stuff. It's not very well known, but it's published as and looks as if you were buying – you know, classical sheet music.
Oh, interesting.
He's done some all kinds of little ditties and played around. The guy is amazing in terms of just a variety of talent. He's not just jazz piano. He can throw down. Definitely, hero of mine as well.
Yeah, what's sad is most of my experience with Mozart and Beethoven and that kind of stuff is the Baby Einstein series went through with my son, because, of course, you're supposed to just immerse them in that stuff for a while. So it's your whole house is this odd, you know, played on a xylophone Mozart for 6 months to a year. It's a very, very weird clash of cultures. Yeah.
Or elevators in office buildings everywhere.
That happens too. Yeah, exactly true.
Right. All right, what else here?
Aaron wrote in and asked a question I was kind of intrigued by. He said, Exocet Miata.
Oh, yeah,
or,
I saw this question.
The Factory 5818.
Yeah.
If he was going to build, he's kind of asking what car to dream about for his dream build. And
this is a fun one.
I actually think that the Factory 5 is the winner here. I say this because the Exocet is only, I mean, that car is scaffolding. Now, I have no doubt it's crazy fun, but
this is an exercise in architecture.
It's Miata scaffolding. Okay. It is your track car only. And the thing about, maybe this is the wrong way to approach it, but in my mind, this is where I'm going, Aaron. If you were going to drive either of those cars to a Cars and Coffee, not just at the track.
Okay.
The Factory 5 is the one you want to be in, because it's just a cool little, what is that cool little car?
Yeah.
And you pull it up. You could just go drive that in a canyon for fun. You've got this cool looking exotic little car. The Exocet looks like what it is. It looks like a home-built garage car that is, don't get me wrong, wicked fast, capable. I'm not taking any of that away from it. But it kind of looks like your garage build. The Factory 5 is kind of like, what's this exotic I haven't heard of? What is that? It has a little bit more of that cachet about it. Is that the reason you're building? I don't know, but I kind of feel like you want to have a home-built sports car that can do track stuff, but is also just kind of a dream car. And so I go Factory 5.
I'm with you on the Factory 5 thing, especially that hard top.
Agreed.
The coupe shape.
The one that looks like a variation on like the Lotus Elise kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it looks like a cross between an Elise and a first-gen Cayman.
Yeah,
it does. A little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a mixing of those two.
And then you look close and you think, what is that? To your point, you know, what is this little car? And then you think, you can do that with the front of a Subaru and put it together? Really brilliant.
And both of them. I mean, both these cars, the donor cars, if you will, the Miata and the WRX, have endless tuning and changing possibilities.
Yeah,
so it's, I feel like it's a wash there.
Sure. I'm with you though on the 818. It just looks more like a substantial car.
We must get one of those on camera. I just, if you're out there with an 818, where are we flying to? Yeah.
On Instagram, EJ Bart asks us, why does the majority of the population leave the ugly plastic dealer license plate frames on their cars? He can't wait to pull them off.
No kidding.
I'm
no
with
kidding.
You.
Yeah.
Any advertising whatsoever, I'm looking at the back of the car thinking, all right, and now we'll go ahead and knock $2,500 off the price of the car because you're paying me for free advertising.
Seriously.
Now. So
seriously, yeah.
Let's make a deal here.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I don't understand. Partly, I think it's just they don't pay attention to it and
they don't think about it.
You know, and I'm out there with, you know, Porsche. It will have a Porsche license plate frame. The end.
Yeah, but it's not a Porsche dealer.
No,
that's
it's
the difference.
Not a Porsche dealer. It's just OEM, just Porsche, the logo, that's it.
That's different. That's at least car branding. Yeah. Though I don't know that you need the Porsche license plate frame below the word Porsche on the back of the car. I am going to stick you for that. But I
hear not.
I knew a guy in high school whose dad went into a Range Rover dealer and was buying like the loaded Range Rover.
Okay.
And this was a dealer, and they were everywhere in Houston. This was a dealer that every car that left their lot had the rear tire cover with their branding on it.
Oh,
and the only difference was what was the animal that was screen printed on the back. And his dad ground them into the earth and said, you will not give me one of those. You will find me a blank one and I will leave with a blank one. And they pushed back so hard. And he was like, look, you need to understand, this is the deal breaking point. He won, but he ground them into the earth. It was the only one I ever saw in town that had no branding on the tire, because he was like, this is the place that I am drawing the line, which I thought was fascinating.
I mean, I'd go for the Range Rover, advertising the car. That's fine.
Yeah, but this was a dealer that did it on all of them.
That's awesome.
He was like, this, trust me, this is the line I will not cross. You want to sell me this car? This is what's happening. But anyway, so there's that. The other thing that I found that really annoyed me, we were getting my wife's Acadia serviced at a local Chevy dealer.
Okay.
They would put them on.
What? You're kidding me.
You would leave with a license plate frame of the dealer. That happened once.
Once and one time only. The next time
I went back in, I'm telling the guy, and they were very nice and they did great work and there's none of those issues. But went through the list of everything and we got done and I said, one more thing. Do not give me this car back with your license plate frames on it because I will take them off when I get home and throw them out.
Yeah.
So you were filling the landfill. Don't even bother. And they didn't, which was nice.
That's nice. I mean, this kind of relates to the should you have the dealer drill the front bumper for you?
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
If you've bought a new car, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, with the Cayman, I bought it used, but I'm using the standoff, the tow hook eye, because you can get license plate standoffs
that just fit in the tow. They're really crazy. Eye. Yeah.
And I mean, you can just about do that for any kind of car, and it saves you drilling through the front bumper. It depends on the car. Like,
yeah.
The Jeep, I just kind of went, all right, gritted my teeth and
sure,
did it. But,
sure.
You know, dealers just don't take any care. They'll just screw right into the urethane and screw it all up. And yeah, that bugs me too, almost as much as the license plate frames.
Rich wrote in on Facebook and asked an interesting question. He said, look, I've owned sports cars my whole life. His whole adult life, he's had Evos, Camaros, Caymans. He had a CTS-V with 700 horsepower. He's had all kinds of stuff. And now he's in his 50s, and his comment is, if you've always owned sports cars, are they ever looked at as a midlife crisis car? And I would say to you, Rich, no, absolutely not. Because now you're just the car guy.
Right.
You're just a guy that owns fun cars, and this is your current one. Okay.
Right.
It's that thing where, look, I'm the guy that I don't care about this perception anyway. Go buy the fun car, even if you've never had one. Obviously, I'm the guy that's going to preach that. But what happens is, you get through college and you have your series of fun cars, and now you get married and you have kids, and all of your cars are, what car do I need? What car can I afford? Mm-hmm. And then the classic midlife crisis thing happens in the 40s or so, and you go buy the exact counter car to everything you've ever owned, and everybody goes, what's going on in his life? That's the reason that it creates quote-unquote red flags, but who cares? Who cares? But Rich, you're right. That is the way around it. You've just set yourself up in everybody's perception as, that's a guy that likes cars, so whatever car you get, kudos.
So a little bit opposite of our anonymous mystery car guy from a few podcasts
anonymous back. Midlife crisis guy who I hope gets something wonderful and then keeps it.
Exactly. All right. Scott D. has asked us if we could provide a couple examples of market segments or specific cars we would like to see a manufacturer compete in. And his example here is a rear-wheel drive Honda sedan. I'm actually thinking something mid-engine from Honda that's affordable, not an NSX.
Ooh.
I mean, that's way up there at the top end.
Sure.
How about a mid-engine Honda? Can you imagine what Honda's take and their recipe would be for a mid-engine car for the rest of us to
that's
compete
excellent.
Against an Elise or something in the a lower-priced Cayman-ish or Elise or something in
you've
there?
Stumbled, that's great because you've stumbled into an interesting thought there. One of the things that's interesting and I think difficult about the new NSX, which is very cool and I look forward to putting it on camera, is that now it's operating at $150,000 with a ton of competition.
Untouchable for everybody.
The interesting thing about it originally was it was well less than $100,000. And so you're right. Where is the little brother to that that's running 60 to 80 that I like that? That's a great one.
I'm thinking about this. And my initial thought, Scott, was something along the lines of, you know, Toyota brings back the Halo car. I think we're going to be pleased very soon here when they bring the Super back, if all the rumors are true. So I kind of left that alone because I think that's coming. But for Honda, this doesn't exist. That mid-engine thinking in an affordable segment doesn't exist to compete against Cayman, Alpha 4C, Elise, somewhere in there. Can you imagine a Honda added to that lineup?
That would be really cool. I admit that's really
what
cool.
What they could do with it and maybe turboed and who knows? I'm intrigued by this thought.
Well, I hadn't really thought about this, but now it's kind of bouncing around in my brain. I'm going to say this. Where's the Lotus competitor to the 3 Series? Alongside the Alfa Giulia.
Okay.
You know, what is the Lotus competitor? Which, you know, if it was the typical Lotus thinking, it would be almost more 2 Series size. It would be a 3 Series competitor. It would be a little bit smaller, a little more agile. That would be an interesting rear-wheel drive. What's the Lotus competition to that market segment? That would be fascinating.
Lotus does a 1M or an M2, something like that?
Yeah.
It'd be lighter.
Something that scale, but four-door. Something that kind of scale, but four-door, would be really interesting. Almost like do the – it would almost be more like the size of the Audi A3.
Okay, sure,
almost
sure.
That size. I but like a Lotus that. Rear-wheel like drive sedan would be fascinating.
Interesting. Hmm. Yeah, this is fun to think about. And then the problem is, Scott, because then you go shopping immediately online because you think, huh, that's the kind of car that I'm looking for that I would like. Who makes something like that? And then you're shopping for that particular car.
Well, and I've also said this before, and the Chevy Cruze is crying out for it, but Chevrolet, where is your hot hatch? Where is it?
Yeah,
where
that's
is
it? A great
the Cruze
yeah.
should have a yeah. hot hatch variant. Chevrolet has nothing in that segment at all. Come on, GM. You're bound to be able to sell them. You're bound to be able to.
Well, as we've talked about before, Ford has a performance car at every price yep. category, all the way yep. to the $400,000 supercar.
Yep. You have 20 grand in your pocket or 400 grand in your pocket. Ford has a car for you.
Yes. For enthusiasts, yep. it's a hot car. It's not your normal run-of-the-mill kind of thing.
Totally agree.
It's something awesome and hot mm-hmm. and fun, and it works, and you're amazed. Yeah. Where's GM with all this?
Mm-hmm.
Trucks. I guess.
Devin wrote in on Facebook and said, what would be your first modification you would do for performance and styling of a car? And my answer is going to be universally always the same.
Hmm.
Wheels and tires.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Wheels and tires are the first thing. I've early on in my auto career, I guess.
Just ownership history. Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. Ownership history. I looked at car kits for, you know, the Audis and, you know, styling kits, and I'm just thinking the longer I live, the less I'm convinced I'm going to get my money back out of doing something like that.
Oh, you're not going to. Yeah, it's gone.
So why Bye-bye. Would I do that?
Bye-bye, yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Why would I go there, do a modification that is performance that you can't see? And as you and I always talk about, the best thing and the first thing you should do is a driver upgrade.
Well, there's that as well, yes. Driver
then
training
wheels
would
and tires.
Be better, but yeah.
Maybe lowering a car, maybe, but...
Well, but I feel yeah. like, you know, the 300ZX I had aftermarket wheels that really made that
oh,
car work.
Yeah.
The FRS I have now has aftermarket wheels. I just feel like, and it's not just go buy the craziest wheel you can because they can get crazy expensive. I think you actually have to look into, okay, are these wheels heavier? You don't want to go that route. But my FRS yeah. wheels, the PF01 Inkies that I have, are lighter than the stock wheels and better looking. Win-win.
Yeah,
the car looks better, and it's amazing to see how much a car changes its style when you just change the wheels. So mm-hmm. that's why I'm totally wheels and tires.
Well, I've got a few more questions here, but one of them is from Ben. He's writing to us on Facebook and says, how often do you heel and toe into a stoplight or a corner? Is it just, you know, you're blipping the throttle and you're done, or is it every time you're coming to a stop? Mm-hmm. 3, 2, 1, down mm-hmm. sequentially through the gears.
Mm-hmm.
I think it comes to light more when you and I are on a shoot and we're driving some fun stuff.
Yeah.
I do it incessantly.
Oh, yeah.
All the time. And well, you're slowing down for, hey, there's a pebble in the road. I should downshift mm-hmm. and I should heel and toe around that pebble. I'm looking for excuses.
That's funny. Well, you know, driving the FRS every day, I would say, and actually the heel toe on that car is pretty much perfect, honestly, the positioning of it.
Yeah,
you know, maybe
yeah.
you could argue, I suppose, maybe it's just the size of me and my foot, but it is absolutely perfect in that car. And so what I find is if I'm coming to a stop in traffic, I'll heel toe into the bottom gear to get that to sync. I'm not going to stair step down through everybody. I'm driving in traffic. I don't
sure,
care.
Sure. Right.
But if I'm driving in any other scenario than that, the answer is always every single shift.
Ben, I do it with a PDK. I think, you know what? I'll just cruise along. No, I won't. Slot it in a manual, downshift, and we're gone. Come on. What am I thinking?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
then I come into a corner, 4, 3, 2, you know, hard on the brakes, and then, yeah.
I remember growing up, there was this guy that was like a private taxi service that always took my family to the airport in England. And I'm
okay.
going way back here.
All right.
And he was a guy that drove a manual. And I remember my dad, when he taught me to drive manual, and he taught me to drive manual kind of marginally because there was no rev matching. And so there was a lot of bouncy, shaky around. Now, I was able to not stall the car and learn to drive, but that's okay, kind of how he drives manual too. But I remember him telling me stories about how he could never figure out why that guy was so smooth. He was so smooth, now I realize, because he was constantly rev matching every gear shift.
Very cool.
So I just, you can make your driving experience more comfortable for you and a passenger driving a manual transmission car just because you know up or down.
True.
Where does the engine need to be?
True.
So you just slot it and it feels as smooth or sometimes smoother than an automatic shift.
Yeah.
And I do drive that way just because I prefer it.
I like that. All right. A few more here. What else is on your list here?
Well, there are so many tonight, but let me jump in here and say, I have to talk about Brandon's writing in on Instagram.
Okay.
This is a tough one, Brandon. What's the most effective way to convert your significant other from being scared and annoyed in the co-pilot seat when you're taking curves or you're driving hard to where they're as equally entertained as you are? I have a counterintuitive answer. The answer is you have to get your significant other interested in driving at the far reaches of the ability of a car. That's the thing. Because what happens here is, look, there's an inherent trust thing that happens, yes. But the truth is most people aren't aware of how capable cars are. Once you become aware of how capable a car are and what a car can do, then somebody driving a car at the upper limits or somebody driving a car hard quits feeling to you like this person's being dangerous and more like this car's fine. It can do that. One of the jokes that Paul and I have made before is there's been plenty of times when we've landed in LA and we hop in a press car and we're headed to meet somebody. And
right.
Paul is hooning his way through traffic. Paul is driving through traffic with his LA demeanor on, and that is something that I guarantee you would make most passengers just ashen faced. Okay? And I have sat in the passenger seat texting, head down texting, solving production problems while he does that and never blinked.
You've been downloading footage before onto your laptop.
I have pretty much been editing while you do that. Now, the only reason I can do that is because I am fully aware, one, Paul's an excellent driver. Sounds like Rain Man. But Paul's a superb driver. I fully trust him as a driver. But secondarily, the sensations that I'm feeling don't concern me. I completely know that a car can do that. So it sounds counterintuitive, Brandon, but I would say get your significant other into an autocross or get them into a driver training so that they can go, I didn't know cars could do this. And you introduce that sensation. Yeah. It's almost the same as saying you want to put your child or whoever onto the crazy roller coaster in your town. You don't start them there. You start to give them the sensations until they can get in the crazy roller coaster and love it. You've got to do that here.
Well, I will say you're an excellent driver, too. I mean, our trust level on shoots is very high, and it's got to be, and that's just developed over the years.
We get cars very, very close to each other.
Yes, yes, we do. And just, you know, when we're cruising through the canyon yesterday, and we were returning the Mazda RF, and we're just, you know, you knew where I was, I knew where you were, and we were just kind of doing this dance down the hill.
It's like formation driving is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's because you and I know each other. But we know each other, but we also know what the cars are capable of. We can put them into a corner at a high speed and know it's going to stick. Not, wonder if this is going to work. No, that's going to be fine. You know, and that just takes having that sensation to have that comfort level.
Right, right. Well, I want to briefly get a little bit philosophical here on Ian's question on Facebook here. He asks us, what have you most learned about yourself through this passion for cars? And how has it shaped your cultural worldview? I'm intrigued by this question, Ian. Very, very nicely done.
There's a full podcast in that somewhere.
It could be, as a matter of fact. It's I'm going to start with Australia and learning more about, haven't been there yet, but learning more about the muscle car enthusiasts that are there. And then, you know, of course, you and I watching all the other shows that, you know, from Grand Tour to Top Gear, and seeing car enthusiasts worldwide speak a common language. We're talking carburetors and headers and downshifting and all this stuff. And everything seems to melt away. Everything else, the politics.
That's good. That's
all the
other
good junk just goes away. And it's just cars. And we can just be friends and hang out and talk cars and styling and car parts and wheels and, you know, drag racing and all this stuff. And I think it's a common bond. I don't know how many other things
that's
on
good
the planet
that's good
can cross-culturally bring people together. I mean, you and I have had people write in from Pakistan.
True.
And hello to those of you listening there. that are car enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. I mean, they might be, you know, into the 70s Cadillacs or whatever that is.
Whatever, yeah, yeah.
But they're looking at cars online and dreaming about car shows and looking at cool stuff and enjoying the hot stuff, the exotics that we love to look at. And it's a few and far between thing that is a subject that we can all agree on.
To some degree, I agree with your point,
be peaceful about and just have fun doing. And cars is one of those things.
There's a common language there. I like that. I like that, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like that in design. And I talked about Ken Okuyama before and other designers. I mean, you know, what makes Italian styling? And how do you make a French car? And what is it about French? And what is it about a British car that is essentially British? And good designers being able to understand culture to be able to do something that represents this culture and keep it in tune. Otherwise, we could slap any badge on any car and call it done.
Sure, yeah.
Hyundais can wear BMW badges. Hondas can wear Ferrari badges.
Yeah, I see your point.
Porsches can wear Kia badges. But
Your garage, that probably could work, actually.
It probably Porsches could work.
Kia badges, yeah.
I pulled that out. But
the Porsche Soul and the Kia Cayman.
Hey.
That's my mind's a little warped, but I take your point.
818s could have a whatever badge on it, you know, Mercedes or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm continually intrigued by this. And you know, you talk cars and you show pictures of cool cars to anybody anywhere on the planet. If they're into the cars, you're off and running. You've got a new best friend.
That is cool. That is cool. I feel like, you know, everybody culturally now is taking sides. We all have, you know, this is the group that I hate.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And I feel like that still exists in car culture. I dislike, you know, all Ford guys. I dislike all Stance people. That's possible.
Yeah.
But I also think, speaking on your point, I think it's easier to cross those lines in cars than just about anywhere else.
You mean come together and find points of agreement and points of
versus religion or politics or all of these things that we end up screaming at each other about. I think cars, you know, look, I will fully admit it. I do not get Stance culture. I don't get it. But that person that has stanced their car to the point that they can't get off a driveway, at their core, loves cars.
Yeah,
they're excited about their car.
Right.
And I, at my core, want a person driving to love their cars. I would rather bond with that Stance guy that I don't get that car at all.
Sure.
But I'd rather bond with that Stance guy than the person that was driving a Camry this morning that treats it like an appliance and a car is a hassle.
Mm-hmm.
I have a commonality with the Stance person, even though I don't get the styling. I think you can cross those lines easier in cars than anywhere else. I hadn't thought about going to this question. This is cool.
I was thinking about it, and then, with a little bit more thought, it occurred to me. And it's also something that nearly, I say that with a very large grain of salt. Cars are something that everybody can relate to.
Mm.
Not everybody. I mean, there's still places on the planet where cars are not in use and don't need to be. That's fine.
Yeah.
But most people on the planet can relate to cars in one way or the other, whether you like them or not. You don't like them, but you know what? I need to get from there to over there. I need a car.
Yeah.
I need to. It's a useful device. Whatever powertrain, whatever it is. And then, you know, we get geeked out and enthusiasts and all that stuff.
Sure.
You know, how did you have fun doing it? You know, all that kind of stuff.
Well, you mentioned that other point. That pings my brain to say something else, and that is that cars are that thing that I can talk to anybody about. Now, I realize for a lot of people, I'm a car guy. You know, I'm the car guy they know. But people that don't know or care about cars, I can have nothing else in common with them in the world. Okay? And look, I'd love to talk about film. I'd love to talk about story. I'd love to talk about all these other things that a lot of times I don't get into those conversations at all. But with somebody I have nothing else in common with, I can still say, what car do you drive? And they can still say, you know what? My whatever is getting old and I need to replace my, you name it, fill in the blank here. I want a new Corolla. I can talk to them grudgingly about why another Corolla might work. Okay. I don't want to. That's a conversation.
Not
I don't
on a five series lease. You're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Five series into, that's exactly where we were going earlier.
Right.
So there is that conversation, but then I can meet somebody who loves cars and I can talk about that all evening as well.
Yeah.
So thankfully I have that go-to conversation at any party on the planet. We can talk for cars for at least 5 minutes until it gets awkward. So that helps too.
And then you head back to the buffet table and try to strike up more conversation about something else. So the weather, sports. Hey, that sports team. Yeah. Anyway. Anything else on your list here to cover before we wrap things up?
I don't know that I have any others that really jumped out to me, even though we could probably do another hour's worth of podcast just on questions. But that's a good group tonight.
We could. We got to debate what car we think your son should ask you to buy next. I mean, he was pretty enthralled with that Mazda RF.
He was
all over that, was he not?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was really intrigued by it. Because, I mean, you know, the crazy fun top of it, he was like, what is this? So as soon as I showed him how it works, it's got a really cool mechanism. He was like, can I hit the button? Get in the car, hit the button, sure. Let's do it. You know, so I took him for a really brief ride. We went one direction with the top up, dropped the top, went back with the top down. And he said to me, we were getting ready to go back. He was like, wait, we're going to go back from right here. I was like, buddy, I have to go drive. I have to go like drive and shoot this car. He wanted to go for like a couple hour drive. He was like, I want to go for like a real drive. We went for 15 minutes or so. He loved it. But that was pretty cool.
That's awesome. Well, maybe in a few weeks, when Chance comes back on the podcast, he and I will debate what you buy next.
We
might do that.
I also have to sell the FRS first. There was a cool question tonight from Army Guy on Twitter. He asked, if a fan bought the car, would I give them a how to drive the FRS and a Canyon lesson? And my answer to that is absolutely. I would
I love that.
I would make that video. That is awesome. Granted, I have to have that person call first. But
right.
I would love nothing more, not only just to sell the FRS to an enthusiast, but somebody that listens to the show. Man, that's a victory there. I'd love to get that car to somebody like that.
That'd be awesome. Well, guys, thank you again for listening. Thank you for writing all these amazing questions. Really thought-provoking. And hope you really love the podcast, too, because we sure love talking about it and talking cars. It's a universal language.
And give us your rating when you get the chance. We'd appreciate that, too.
Yeah, please do. So, yeah, check out our videos online. Films as well. Do not forget that. And the Pilgrimage Trip, everydaydriver.com/adventures. Go check that out and come with us. You are cordially invited.
Definitely.
Please come. And until next time, cheers.